Hi, this is Russ Emanuel, and you're listening to the Social Informant Podcast. The fact is, these movies make money. So what are the studios going to do? They're going to keep following the same pattern.
Yeah.
Because they are a business. If the audience can only see my expression right now. You have to learn to let go.
I'm Henry the Eighth.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Now I'm going to have nightmares.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
This is Charlie B, and I'm with
JB.
What? And you're listening to the Social Informant Podcast. We're in Huntington Beach, sitting down with our guest, Russell Emanuel. But you like to go by Russ.
You can go by Russ, Rusty, Russell. It's up
Russy,
to you.
Can you go by Russy? That'll be my name for you. Russy.
Only for you, Charlie
okay.
B.
Thanks. So welcome, Russ. Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So I'll tell you a little how this works. We're going to start off at the beginning of your journey and work our way full circle. So we'll ask you a series of questions in regards to your life and your work.
Okay.
That'll allow us to get to know you on a human level. Learn about what you do and how you do it so that others in the same industry as you learn from your experiences. We appreciate you for allowing us to share your story on our podcast and in our forum. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
And thank you and thank you.
Thank you and thank you. A lot of thank yous.
So much gratitude right here.
So a bit of background on you. I collected some information. We were like stalkers.
Oh, no. Right?
Just we're like always stalkers.
Russ is worried. Look at his face. The expression on his face. He's worried.
Yes. If the audience could only see my expression right now.
You were born in Alameda, California.
Yes.
And raised in both LA and Japan. Mm-hmm. You studied cinema, television, international relations, and Japanese at USC, where you earned a Bachelor's of Arts degree, right?
Yes.
Okay. Your accomplishments to date include features such as PJ, Chasing the Green, The Legends of Nathaya, the documentary Restoration of Paradise, and your most recent work, your fourth feature film, that is currently in post-production Occupants, right?
Yes.
Okay. So why LA and Japan? Were you a military baby?
My dad, he worked for an international company.
Okay.
So his company sent him to Japan.
Makes sense why you studied international relations.
Yes.
Okay. And Japanese.
Which, you know, I garnered a very international perspective on life, which, you know, I carry to this very day. And I put in my films, too. Yeah.
That's okay. Cool.
When did you guys move back? Were you born here, moved to Japan, and then came back?
Or? Oh, you want the long story?
Oh, yeah. That's what
whatever story you want to give us.
Yeah.
Well, I was born in Alameda.
Okay.
And when I was, I think, 3 or 4, we moved to Tokyo, Japan.
Oh.
And actually, my first language was Japanese.
Oh, okay.
Sweet. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was in a Japanese kindergarten for 1 year. And then we moved back. Now, I don't remember all this. This is, you know.
Right. This is told to you.
Told to me from my parents. Mm-hmm. But then I think we moved to Long Beach or Los Alamitos, you know, which is in the vicinity of Los Angeles. And we lived here until I was in eighth grade. Now, up to there, I do remember the eighth grade and all that. So, you know, I was in
Los
Alamitos.
That's middle school, right?
Yeah, it was middle school.
Uh-huh.
And I went from a public middle school of, I think, was like 3,000.
Oh, my
God.
Kids, right?
Damn.
Well, it's L.A.,
But, you know, I mean, it's kind of, a very normal public school.
Okay.
And then we moved to Japan, to Kobe, Japan. And then I was attending this international school.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's in English.
Okay.
Called Canadian Academy. And I was there for 5 years. Now, my graduating class, I think, was around maybe like 30 people.
Oh, my God.
So
wow,
I went
that's
like
a massive difference.
Yeah, it's a massive difference. So I know quite a few of my class members because of that, because it was very small, very intimate, you know.
Yeah.
One of my experiences when I was in Japan, there was an earthquake there in 1995. It was called the Great Hanshin Earthquake, and it killed like, I think, 6,000 people. I have very vivid memories of that.
Right.
It was like 5:46 in the morning, January 17th. But because of that, my graduating class went from originally like 60 or something, went to 60 to 30 because a lot of the kids were sent back.
Which was literally right around the corner from the L.A. earthquake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think the L.A. one was 1 year before.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is very,
right?
Either very coincidental
yes.
or I don't know. But then I graduated that year, and I went to USC.
Okay, so from Japan,
yeah,
you moved back.
Then I went moved back.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you went a few times.
That was when, when the O.J. Simpson trial was going on.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
I went from
a major moment.
Yeah, and you know, if you know USC, very wonderful school, and
yeah.
I love USC, but if you know where it's located, especially during that time. It was only a couple years after the LA riots. So the school was on lockdown because if OJ was pronounced guilty, they did not know what was going to happen. Now, I was by myself. I had no car. I moved from Japan, and that was the situation I was put in. I think I was still 17. I turned 18 on August 31st, and the school started like August.
Your birthday's the day after mine.
Oh, well, there you go. 30th. No wonder we get along. We're Virgos.
We are.
Okay, guys, now you can go get married. Normally, it's okay. So funny because I normally say.
I think there's a chapel down the street.
Right?
So now it's you guys. You'll wed soon. You know?
Wow, one day apart. That is something.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Something.
But, you know, again, USC is a wonderful school. I mean, it's a wonderful school. I had a great time there. I was there for 5 years. I studied abroad 1 year in Nagoya, Japan. That's why I was, you know, at USC for 5 years. Okay. So basically that 1 year I was on the scholarship. It was kind of like a vacation, you know, and I backpacked
and
all over Japan.
You already knew the area. Well, I don't know. It's a different area, but you were like, I've
been
hand.
There, done that.
Yeah.
It was great. I was like 20, 21. And I've seen, you know, where people in Europe would backpack. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're young once. Let's just do it. So that's what I did. So.
Right.
It was really fun.
You've had quite the interesting childhood.
Yeah, more so than now.
You're like, I have no life now.
Like,
all I
now.
Do is work.
Well, my life is all the current film occupants, which is fine.
See, all this stuff is really interesting. That's why we like to
that's
get
my
to the
story,
bottom
and I'm
stuff.
Sticking to it.
Okay.
Yeah, but the backstory is important.
Absolutely.
Because how did you get where you are?
Mm-hmm. I agree. When you like direct also, mm-hmm. you know, for a character, it's always about their backstory too. It's about building their history.
Exactly.
Into why they are who they are mm-hmm. in the present day, which is in the script. You know, why are they like that? Well, that's their quote-unquote motivation, that cliche. What is your motivation? Well, it's your backstory. So everybody has a backstory.
That's absolutely true. Awesome, because I believe that we have personal and professional motivators.
Yeah.
So who or what motivates you on a personal level? And then, you know, the same question on a professional level.
My parents, very wonderful, loving people, Charles and Akemi Emanuel. I think they instilled that into me on a very
to be a hard worker.
Hard worker, to be open to ideas, to love to explore. They gave me a lot of leeway in terms of being creative, where other parents, they may not have done that. But my parents were very lenient and very wonderful.
Wow.
And that's
so
one reason
lenient?
I'm able
like
to
they just let you draw on the walls or like what?
Well, no, not like that. But they let me pursue my goals.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah. And I really appreciated that. I guess on a professional level, I'm a big fan of film music. You know, I grew up on the music of John Williams, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of people have. But for me, that really did affect me. Whether, you know, it's Superman, the mm-hmm. Richard Donner version, not
okay.
the new one.
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
Or Star Wars or Indiana Jones. I remember seeing Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And I was, I think, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was in Japan at this point, right?
Okay.
And I don't know if you know, but movies in Japan, they come out like 6 months later.
Oh, whoa.
So I was seeing this in, I think, either Christmas time of 1993 or 1994. That was its opening in Japan, which kind of sucks because, you know, you want to see it when the movie actually comes out. In this case was, I think, in the summer. So I was watching it. And I remember that scene in the helicopter when they were approaching, I think it was Isla Nublar at the beginning
this
of the film.
This is in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. And I heard John Williams' music.
Yeah.
And it just worked so well in that scene. I mean, I just fell in love. I get goosebumps just even thinking about it.
You gave me goosebumps. It's like on my legs and my face, my arms.
So it wasn't the static electricity.
It was kinetics from music.
But that's the thing. I mean, the film music, I just love it. And it really motivated me more so, I think, than any other, I guess, filmmaker, which is why in my films now, I'm very particular about music.
How do you select your music, basically, for your films, and how important is it to a particular scene?
What I would do is I would do what's called a music breakdown. You have to what's called lock picture, which is you have to have a final edit. So let's say once the film is 91 minutes and 27 seconds, that's it. It's locked and you cannot change it. And at that point, then you parcel it off to various departments, sound, music, and visual effects. And they're all connected through a visual time code that you put onto the film.
Wow.
So at this time code, and that's where you make the notes in the music breakdown. You say at, you know, time code 01, 00, 28, 27, then, you know, I want it to start to crescendo. And then you have a what's called a music hit, which they would hit whatever's on screen. So mm-hmm. if a character starts gasping for some reason and the music just hits that.
It amplifies what's
happening. Yeah. So, you know, these are the notes that I would do. And I've watched Occupants. Let's say we're just talking about my current film.
Right.
Oh, I watched it maybe 1,000 times because you have to. You just have to watch it over and over
until
and over again.
You pull out the details, right?
Well,
you really like hone in on
well,
that?
Well, not only that, let's say you're watching a film just for the music and nothing else. And so you watch it several times just to make sure. And sometimes, you know, you tweak the notes. And my current composer, his name is Vasilis, very wonderful guy. He lives in Spain. You know, I would tell him, and this is how I work with the crew and the cast too. I say, look, I'm just one person. So if you have ideas, you know, tell me and let's collaborate and let's figure it out. Because other people will have good ideas too. So my music breakdown is kind of a guideline. It's like, I think it will work like this. And then you tell me, what do you think?
Right.
And so, you know, I would watch the movie just for music. And I would watch it several times just to make sure that I got it right or that I didn't miss anything. Because our current film is, what, 81 minutes?
Okay.
So you're going to miss something. I mean, it's a long film.
Yeah.
I mean, relatively. It's not like 100 minutes, but, you know, it is a feature film.
Just to check on that, what makes it a feature film? It has to be over 60 minutes?
What is it? On IMDb, it's like 45 minutes and above.
Okay.
Well, I think really it could be maybe 60. You know,
just
certain
curious.
Film festivals that you submit to, they have certain guidelines.
Okay.
I think some is like 60, some is 45. It's very subjective, but I would say maybe over 70 minutes.
Okay.
I've seen, was it like Naked Gun? One of the films was like 83 minutes long. And it's obviously a feature film. You know, basically, I watched the film, like I was saying, over 1,000 times because I would focus on just that one element, music. Then I would watch it again just for sound design. I would watch it again just for, say, voiceovers or ADR, if we have to do any of that. ADR is automated dialogue replacement. Let's say I don't put the notes for technical reasons. That's up to the sound designer. I put it for performance. If I did not like a performance and I want it redone in ADR, I would make those notes. Let's say there were some lines that were missing. Like in Occupants, there's this one scene where the way it was edited, it's silent. There's like very frenetic dialogue. Then there's silence for like 10 seconds. Then there's frenetic dialogue again. Well, there's nothing in those 10 seconds. So the factor just dies down. You need to keep the momentum going. And I made that decision. We need more dialogue there. And that's called a voiceover. So then I watched it again for visual effects. We have a company in India and someone in the Philippines who are doing our visual effects. Well, they need all these notes too. So I would watch it for just the different aspects of the film.
So that's interesting.
Really inundate you yourself with this project.
Yes.
Or with any project over and over and over again.
So it's not all glitz and glam. It's like a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I am very intimate with my film. It's my baby.
I
want to make sure that it turns out the best that it can be. Now, of course, that's how I do it. Other people may do it differently. You know, you have many, many filmmakers out there.
Yeah.
And everybody has their own way
style
of doing things.
And,
So that's my style. You know, as we were mentioning, I'm Virgo. I'm a perfectionist.
Right.
I like to micromanage. So that's what I tend to do.
But I think that's quality work.
You know, I hope so.
Do you sit down with the actors? And we love Jaren Hall, and he's a great guy, and he's doing a ton of work. He had me show up to one of his, I don't know what you call it, sit-down read or something like that.
Like in rehearsals?
He had,
or a cast reading?
Maybe a cast reading. He had some of the actors show up.
And they read the script.
Yes, and he said, I don't want you to act it out. I just want you to read it.
Yeah.
I want to hear you read it, and that is it. And then he had me read a couple lines, and I was like, I can't do this. And he said, no, all you're doing is just reading it.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
There's a cast reading. I definitely do rehearsals. Again, it's all time. If you have the time to do it, sometimes you don't. It's just the nature of filmmaking.
What would be the purpose of reading it without acting it out, though? Is it just for fluency's sake?
Certain people can say certain words and other people cannot. So sometimes it becomes a tongue twister.
Oh,
it may look great on paper. You know,
so it's for fluency.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow.
Okay. Or they might say like, Russ, I don't really say it this way. Can I try to say it that way? Then you'll make a correction to the script. Now, I'm more lenient in that sense because I just want the most natural performance.
Okay.
So, you know, as long as they stick to the story, I don't mind if the dialogue is tweaked.
Okay.
If it brings out a more natural performance. Because if they have to really try to enunciate a certain word that they don't know, then it's going to be acting. And they cannot act. They have to do. Physically, they have to do it. It has to be natural. And that's why I'm very open to doing that.
Okay. And then when you do tweak that, do you have to go back to the writer and say, oh, we had to
sometimes
tweak this line?
Sometimes.
So that
it just depends on the project. But yeah. Sometimes okay. you have
probably
to.
Depends on how far off it was from the original line.
Well, yeah.
And look, then of whatever relationships you have and who's, what all parties are involved.
Look, the writer, it was their script that started the project. So I'm very grateful to the writer, and I will definitely keep the writer's dialogue in place as much as possible. And every time we have to make a tweak, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that it does not veer from the subject matter and it does not veer from the script.
Okay. If that makes, definitely makes sense. Yeah.
Because again, the writer did start this project, if you think about it.
Yeah. I just have to say, you do such a good job explaining the details.
Well, some people do, and some people can do and teach, and you're definitely good at teaching. I think people who are in this industry are going to listen to this interview and have a better understanding
yes.
of what it is that they really have to do.
Yeah. We've learned from Jennifer Lynch and Jaren that post-production can be international. It doesn't just have to be national.
Oh, yeah.
And so you were saying somebody's in Spain. Who's in Spain?
My composer's in Spain. We're recording the score with an orchestra in Portugal. We have visual effects artists in India and the Philippines. We're doing these quote-unquote testimonial videos.
Right.
It's to be used in a corporate video, which is going to be used in the film itself. So it's like a shot within a shot within a shot.
Oh,
it's
interesting.
It's kind of interesting, a little complicated.
Okay.
But we're getting these videos from all over the world. And I mean all over the world. England, France, Pakistan, Philippines, Japan, you name it. We're getting it. We even got a voiceover artist out of Cleveland, Ohio. And he just sent it in through the internet. I mean, that's the beauty of the internet now.
Yeah.
Is that you can send massive files on Dropbox, Hightail, WeTransfer.com. You know, and you have to. I mean, these files are huge. Sometimes, like these videos I'm getting, one of them was 200 megabytes.
Oh, damn.
Imagine trying to do this 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
It would be impossible.
AOL would still be starting up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to transfer. 5 hours later, you'd get your file.
Well, it's the beauty of living in 2015, not 1995.
Yeah.
Not that I did not enjoy 1995.
True, true.
But, you know, with 2015, you could do a lot more.
Yeah.
Especially with the internet.
I think especially artists nowadays are relying more and more on social media.
Yeah.
So in the sense that 2015 is here, I mean, things really started to evolve for us in after 2000. And in terms of the internet and social media, it's just like it's rapid fire. Everything's you're inundated by everyone and everything, and it's all so quick, and the news on Twitter, and I mean, it's just, you know, the speed of light.
Well, look at like smartphones, you know, with smartphones, they're not actually phones, they're computers. If you think about it, they're just mini computers. And you can do, you can use it as a phone, but you can also use it as a navigational computer,
right?
You know, the navigator, and I mean, the weather, the internet, you name it, you can do anything with it. It's amazing technology.
In 1990, we were still using the maps, unfolding the maps and trying to find our way around. Like, what route do I take? And
well, I still have some in my car.
You do?
I just never take it out.
Just in case? That is that is a great thing to do.
No, I have one in my trunk as a backup as well.
Yeah.
Just
what if your
maybe
phone
your
dies?
Battery. Yeah,
yeah exactly.
The battery dies.
Then at least I won't die.
Or, like, JB is probably like super frustrated with her phone and chucks it on the ground.
Oh,
and
boy.
Then she,
done that a few
you know,
times.
Yeah, very angry person. I'm just kidding.
When it comes to navigation, yes.
Oh, I'm scared now.
Just don't tell me the wrong directions.
Maybe you guys don't want to get married, okay? So
I'm rethinking the marriage thing.
Russ, I'm warning
you. Sorry.
Just get me lots of phones.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Instead of a bouquet, it'll
that's
just
on the
be
Christmas
lots of phones.
List.
On
every year, new phone.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
So we were diving into occupants and sort of all the stuff that happens in the background. Why don't you talk about the film itself?
Okay.
Yeah.
Occupants. Well, we started the project around January 2014. And when I say we, I work with my producer, Howard Nash. And this is our fifth film together. So we worked together since PJ. You were mentioning
right.
PJ.
Yeah.
So are all your feature films with him?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Howard is definitely an integral part
of
my quote-unquote success, if you will.
Okay.
Awesome.
But yeah, January 14, 2014, he optioned the script, Occupants, from writer Julia Camara.
Okay.
And Julia Camara has done several films. I think she did one with Andy Garcia. I think another with Juliette Lewis.
Okay.
So she's a member of the Writers Guild of America. So this is a WGA script. And, you know, there's legalities involved in that. But it was a really brilliant script because basically it's about a young couple that are named Annie and Neil Curtis. And Annie's a documentarian. And she's trying to do what's called 30 Days of Clean Living.
Oh, gosh.
And it's kind of like the reverse Supersize Me. And so she sets up cameras all over the house to record them eating a raw vegan detox diet.
Oh, God. Yeah. That would be hard.
Yeah.
For me, it would be easy.
Well,
for
you, you watched the film and they had a hard time, too.
Poor guys.
But here's the thing. They start capturing this parallel footage. Basically, it's them, but they're different. So she's Annie Curtis is in our film a blonde. Her parallel version's a brunette.
Oh. Huh.
Neil Curtis, the real version, he has facial hair. Okay. The parallel version, he looks like a grunt in the army. You know, close cropped hair, no facial hair at all.
Right. Yeah.
Two very different characters, too.
Okay.
And what's so brilliant about the script is Annie and Neil Curtis, they're very loving couple. However, parallel Annie and Neil Curtis are not. This is a horror film, so I'm not going to spoil it. But okay. Let's just say parallel Annie and Neil are not the nicest people in the world. But they are Annie and Neil Curtis. They're just a different version. So are Annie and Neil, loving Annie and Neil, they start to doubt each other and also themselves. So for an actor, this is, at first they're playing two different characters, but they're also playing a character where they have to doubt each other and themselves. It's so brilliant.
Wow.
It's psychological. Crazy. It's very psychological. So I fell in love with the script and I had to do it. So what we did
I need to see it.
Yeah.
The big joke is I can't wait to see it either.
But after 81 times.
Yeah. But as a final project.
Yeah.
Not the version I'm viewing
I would love to sit next to you and watch your face the entire time you're watching it.
Oh, I probably
and I'd be like
I'm probably foaming at the mouth. I mean, it's like, yeah, when I'm so immersed in what I'm doing, I tend to forget everything else. But basically, you know, we had the script. We optioned it from the writer, Julia.
Then now, when you say optioned it, you purchased it or what does that
mean? It's a contract with the producer did with her. So I wasn't involved.
Okay.
Is what the producer does. This is a producer's job. That's why Howard, you know, I love him because he knows how to do all this. You know?
Okay, gotcha.
It's not easy work to deal with all these contracts and everything. But, you know, I mean, my job is more artistic, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was talking to Howard and I go, Howard, we got to do this. You know, let's do this. You know, it was one of several projects. We have several projects that, you know, he options other scripts too. But I really want to do this one. So we started an Indiegogo campaign, which is kind of like Kickstarter. It's a crowdfunding. But unlike Kickstarter, the reason we went with Indiegogo is because whatever money you raise, you can still keep it.
Right.
Minus a, I think, 9% fee. Mm-hmm. Now, if you reach your goal, then it becomes 4%.
Yes.
So, and we reached our goal. We were able to, and that's a story in itself, just raising the money. Oh, that was something.
One of the things we touch base on is funding, like how you, well, obviously it's Indiegogo, but what was your goal?
Our goal for Indiegogo was $27,172, and we raised $28,830.
Wow,
now,
it has
gone up since then, but
but
that was the budget that we had in place.
Okay.
So we raised, I think, 106%, so 6% over.
That's very good.
Yeah. And one, it builds a good track record that we can actually raise the money successfully. So if we ever do another campaign, we'd be like, look, we did this first one and look, we got 106%. It's a success, raising the money, that is. but yeah, I remember I went to my neighbors and I was like a door-to-door salesman.
You were?
Which, you know, I'm very sorry, my neighbors. But we also had
like when you sell the coupon books when you're in middle school.
No, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm keeping everybody involved, though. And that's another thing about Indiegogo. You know, I put up updates every couple days, let's say, about what's happening on the film. And when we have a premiere, and I definitely everybody's invited, anybody who donated to the project, because without them, this film would not be here today.
Right.
And I am acutely aware of that. So, you know, we had the momentum going with the money that we raised. And we started pre-production even before the campaign was over because we knew we were going to reach 100%. I think we did that in July and it ended in early August. And then we filmed September. When did we film? The campaign ended in September around the 10th or so. And then we filmed on the 24th. So it was kind of an interesting time period.
Wow.
At the same time, we had to find a location. And we were able to find one through a company called Airbnb. Okay, yeah. But it was
I love Airbnb,
beautiful location we found. And we paid for it, of course. But yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. It's a very filmic place. And I'm so happy we found it because I don't think the film would be the same without it.
Wow, really? That's an insanely short period of time.
Yes, I know. But there's another story. I'm going to segue just very quickly. When I was doing PJ, right?
Okay.
We were finishing up PJ. We recorded the score for PJ in May of 2007. We started pre-production. We wrapped it up. Like, we had our premiere in like July of 2007, and we started filming the next film like 2 weeks later.
Whoa.
So we were already in deep pre-production on Chasing the Green, which was my second feature.
Right.
While we were completing PJ. And that was that was so ridiculous.
I bet you were like, oh
my God. I was happy though. Look, I was not yet even 30 and I was doing two feature films. Yeah. So I was like, I was in hog heaven. Now getting back to Occupants, it was kind of the same thing. On a smaller scale, I guess. You know, I mean, at this point, I've had, what, maybe 10 years of filmmaking experience. So
excellent.
I knew how to handle it. And I like to plan ahead. So I knew what was going to happen for the most part.
Right.
Knock on wood.
You are a perfectionist.
But then
you can't see the future.
No, I can't see the future.
Virgos can see the future.
Virgos can see the future.
I wish.
This is what JB says all the time.
But, you know, we ended the campaign around September 10th or so. And, you know, we started filming on the 24th. So we had to lock the location. We have to find our actors, right? And we did a massive search for Annie Curtis. We had auditions at my friend Alex DeLerma, who's another filmmaker.
Okay.
And he's just finishing up his feature film. It was called Agora. The name has changed. But he was kind enough to give us a discount for an audition space.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
And so we had auditions on 18th and the 19th of September. And then we had callbacks on the 19th almost immediately.
Wow.
But we were auditioning maybe 24 actresses.
Okay. And so you really, in one day, you really have to just...
Oh, it was a lot.
Wow.
But then we found our actress, Brianna White. And she is fantastic. She's so incredible.
Really?
I mean, I was so happy. You don't know how happy I am. I mean, we found the right location, the right actress. It worked. It worked so well. So, you know, then we filmed over, I think, 10 shoot days, which is not a lot, you know. But here's the thing. This is a found footage film. A lot of the cameras are static. And unlike a traditional narrative film where you have to have like a wide shot, establishing shot, you have maybe a medium shot close-up, medium shot close-up, actor one, actor two. This one, it's like the camera's just static.
Oh, that's gotta be hard.
Well, it's hard in the sense that there's not a lot of edit points, but we did find edit points. We use what's called visual glitches.
Okay.
And I can't really go into it, but let's say when you watch the film, you'll understand.
All right.
And in that sense, it made it easier. So we were able to get quite a lot done per day. Now, on a traditional narrative film, it would be impossible. There's no way we could do it. But we could do it for this film. So we shot for 10 days. And the most interesting day was on October 1st, 2014. That was the day when our actors switched to their parallel selves.
Oh, interesting.
Now, for the guy, he just had to go to a barbershop.
Okay.
Yeah. And he shaved his beard and, you know, trimmed his hair.
Yeah.
It was pretty easy, relatively.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
For the woman, Brianna,
yeah, she's
she had a dye job. Now, here's the thing. There's this one shot where she is playing both characters and they're in the same shot. And this is our, quote unquote, what we call a money shot.
Okay.
Because it's a shot that I think people will remember the film for, that one shot.
Okay.
That's why they call a money shot.
Yeah.
So we had her play her real self and with the blonde hair. And then 5 hours later, she played her parallel self.
Oh, God.
And the camera could not move in those 5 hours. The lighting, everything had to stay the same for those 5 hours.
Okay.
Oh, damn.
Now, for those 5 hours, anything could have happened. What we call force majeure. It's a legal term, act of God.
Uh-huh.
What if there's a minor earthquake and the camera moved? Or what if one of the lights went out? Or, you know, what if somebody went on, it's called a hot set. A hot set is you cannot touch anything.
Okay.
What if anything could have happened? And
what
in those 5 hours, yeah, the wind,
yeah, iPod broke.
Right.
Yeah.
Or let's say the dye job didn't go well.
Right.
Anything, you know, I don't know. It was the worst 5 hours of my life because I'm used to doing things. I'm kind of a workaholic, so I like to keep doing stuff. I could not do anything. None of us could.
So you were sitting duck until...
Well, I was watching a movie on my phone with the crew. Because there's nothing we could do.
Yeah.
We just had to cross our fingers and hope that everything would turn out okay. Mm. Now, in retrospect, it did. But during those 5 hours, oh, I was very jittery. That was the worst.
I can only imagine.
Experience.
She
That's
is like
taking an entrance exam or something and being like, oh,
yeah.
Did I make it?
Exactly. The waiting. It's the waiting. It's
just
awful.
Post the motherfucking thing.
Yeah.
And she interacted with herself on camera.
God.
So what if the movements weren't perfect?
So she had to remember what she had done as the other character.
Well,
while
we had my friend Eric Cass, great guy. He did like the behind the scenes. He's also one of the associate producers on the film. Anyway, he filmed Video Village. Video Village is the monitor that you set up for the director and the script supervisor. Script supervisor does continuity.
Oh, God.
So we watch Video Village. You know, our job isn't really to go on set unless it's for me to communicate with the actors. Usually I'm sitting behind the monitor.
Okay.
So he filmed the monitor. We did like several takes of her. You know, I can't really spoil it, but let's say interacting. Of course,
appropriately.
We had kind of a double, and her name is Jennifer Durst, who is our unit production manager, who handles kind of like the paperwork, but she was also the double for this character.
Wow.
So she helped with that too in order to give the actress the marks.
Yeah.
So our actress was able to watch that, the takes that I like, and I think it was like take 2 and 4. And then we said, you know what, let's just choose 4. So 5 hours later, after she's, you know, all done with her brunette hair and all that, anyway, she comes in and then we watched that shot again that my friend Eric, he filmed.
Right.
And we're like, okay. So we pretty much got the action done. And then she does several takes of the parallel version interacting with the real version. He filmed that too. And then what I did in my editing program was combine it. And make sure that it looks like it works. And it worked.
Wow.
Oh, did it work? And I was so happy. Oh, I was so happy. Oh, those 5 hours of waiting, it just paid off. It was the best experience.
Yeah.
So what was it? It was the best of times, the worst of times.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. The worst of times
like
was the waiting. The best of times was that it actually worked.
Yeah.
So we finished on October 3rd with all the shooting. And it went well. It went really well. We got the shots. And it seems everybody was happy. I think.
Yeah.
I hope so. When I make a film, I want everybody to feel welcome because everybody has an integral part in making a film, cast and crew. So I want everybody to have a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
To the best of my ability. And I hope they did. I really do. So we've wrapped and, you know, we had what's called a wrap party.
Right.
Which is you don't wrap.
Right.
But no, it's
or wrap people.
Yeah. Right. Yes. And so we had a wrap party, which is pretty normal on a film, you know, when you wrap, because it's hard when you shoot. Mm-hmm, I mean, we were shooting, you know, maybe 13, 14 hour days.
Wow.
It gets really tough. It's very stressful. So it's kind of like a relief, stress relief. That's what a wrap party is.
So that's the thing. And like the entire body of work really is a collaboration. You were talking about that while we were off the show.
Oh, yes.
Really.
Oh, yes. Look, the director cannot do everything. It's impossible. If you do everything, what happens is you will make mistakes. And I have tried that on previous films. My first film, Her Night, it did not work because I was trying to do everything and I made too many mistakes and the film suffered for it. You have to learn to let go. You have to learn to trust your crew and your
delegate.
Cast. You have to learn. You have to do it. Yeah. There's just no way you could do everything. It's impossible. So, and I learned that hard lesson. Trust me.
Yeah.
Did I learn? You want to go into my history of the films?
Yeah.
So I did Her Night. Then based on the mistakes I made on Her Night, then I did a film called Girl with Gun, which was my second short film. And that film was able to get into a lot of festivals, win awards. And that's the one that garnered the attention of my producer, Howard Nash.
Okay.
And based on that, then he says, Russ, if you raise the other half of the money for this film called PJ, which I already have actor John Hurd of Home Alone attached.
Right.
That's what it was.
Couldn't figure out.
I was like, that dude is famous. I saw his face.
The Home
and
Alone
I was like,
dad, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Thank you.
Yeah,
it was
good old Johnny
me
H.
Crazy.
Oh, he likes Johnny H.
Johnny H.
But yeah, I mean, then I was able to raise the other half through a very wonderful guy in Tennessee. And we were able to make, it was my first feature film. And was that daunting, I tell you. Because, you know, making a feature is not like making a short. It is not at all. And in this case, I had John Hurd. This is the first time I worked with Robert Picardo, which I worked with him 5 times now.
Oh,
Occupants is my fifth time. Yeah.
So you call him Bob.
Bob, yeah. Bob Picardo.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks,
Bob. Bob knows that I thanked him many, many times. No, but Bob is a consummate professional. He's a great guy to work with. But on this film, we also had Hallie Kate Eisenberg.
Okay.
Who was the Pepsi girl.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And she was in, I think, Bicentennial Man.
Oh.
Yes. With Robin Williams, the
yeah,
late.
Yeah, where he was
and
like
great
the
Robin
little.
Williams.
Late and great, yes.
The little
yeah.
robot.
Yeah, he was
well,
the
he
robot,
was, yeah.
and she was the little girl that was interacting. So we had her. We had Vincent Pastore from The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. Glynis O'Connor. It was a stellar cast.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
fact is, this was my first feature. Very daunting to work with a cast of that caliber.
Right.
Trust me, I had like nightmares every night.
Like, no,
before
I'm
we were
screw
shooting.
It up.
But look, I'm going like, you know, I mean, I was thinking, look, I'm in a position to be able to do this. And a lot of people want to, you know, be able to do something like
right.
this. I, you know, I mean, I was so grateful. You don't know how grateful I was. So I put all my energy, all my effort. I'm like, hey, what the heck? Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You know, so every day it was just like doing it one day at a time. And it turned out to be a very wonderful film, you know,
yeah.
when all was said and done.
Yeah.
Based on that, then I was able to make the second film, Chasing the Green, which has William Devane,
mm-hmm.
Who worked with Alfred Hitchcock.
Wow.
Which for me, that was something
yeah.
amazing.
It was huge for, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. And he was just in 24 Live Another Day as President Heller.
That. No, I haven't seen
that.
That
was like
either.
Last year. It was the limited release series of Jack Bauer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So, William Devane, Jeremy London, A Party of Five, and Ryan Hurst
yeah,
of
right?
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. So,
wow.
I mean, again, it was another really stellar cast. We had
yeah.
Heather McCone, Larry Pine. Larry Pine was in House of Cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He plays the speaker, I think,
yeah.
of that show.
Mm, yeah.
That film we did right after PJ. I was explaining how
right.
you know, we were in pre-production when we were in post-production on
yeah.
PJ.
So no wonder you almost
something.
Had a heart attack.
Yeah.
yeah. oh, my God.
Yeah.
And we were having nightmares.
But, you know, at the same time, I'm like, look, I celebrated my 30th birthday on set. And
wow.
I remember that day, the producer, Howard, he got me a pineapple cake and all the cast, the crew, the extras, everybody was there. And it was such a, it was so memorable.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
that. That was a wonderful experience. Then after that, we did Legends of Nathaya.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did Restoration of Paradise, which is on the Bolsa Chica wetlands,
mm-hmm.
Which is right here in Huntington Beach. So, and that was, again, with Bob Picardo. And same thing with Nathaya. That was with Bob Picardo.
Okay.
And now we're doing Occupants.
Yeah.
That's
You've had
the
quite
evolution.
The ride. You've had quite the ride.
Oh, you don't know how grateful I am.
Yeah.
And I understand other people would love to be where I am. And
mm-hmm.
just, you know, you cannot take it for granted. You really cannot.
Yeah.
I mean, I work my butt off. And one reason is I know that I'm one of so many people and I just happen to be lucky. Very, very grateful.
Do you think it comes down to luck?
Luck does play a role.
Okay.
Look, I seem to know what to do, you know, and I understand that. You know, I mean, I like to micromanage. You know, I like to break down the script. I'm very good with music because I love film music,
right.
you know, and I seem to know how to direct the act.
Yeah.
I hope.
So maybe but, luck in the sense that you met Nash,
yeah,
but then
yeah,
not luck because you turned it your way by working hard.
Maybe. I mean, look, it's a combination of everything. But again, I cannot take it for granted. Because,
yeah.
again, I know so many other people would love to be where I am.
Oh,
and I understand
absolutely.
That. I'm just so happy that Occupants is coming together nicely. And trust me, it's coming together nicely right
yeah.
now.
When is it going to be released?
Probably the summer. Because we want to submit it to film festivals like Shriek Fest and Scream Fest. And their deadlines are coming up.
Okay.
So we need to be done by then.
Okay. Are there any topics that you want to talk about?
That we missed.
We've talked about Occupants. We've talked about production, casting, your roles on and off the set.
I should mention my DP editor, Emil
okay.
Harris, great guy. I've known him for a good maybe 12, 13 years now.
Okay.
I met him at UCLA Extension, which
oh,
is
that's
the
right.
other
you said-
part of how I became a filmmaker. Basically
okay.
at USC, I took critical studies and that's film analysis. So we watched a lot of films and we analyzed. We did some production, but not a lot, you know.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in UCLA Extension, I learned how to physically make a film, the technical side. And that's where I met Emil Harris.
Okay.
And he and I have worked together on pretty much all the films that I've done to the
yeah.
present day. Without him and without Howard Nash, I would not be here today. So, Emil, you know who you are. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So,
thanks,
Emil, Howard, and Russ Posse.
There you go.
Oh, the Posse.
Yeah, that's the Posse. It's the Three Musketeers yeah. right there.
The Three Musketeers.
We have to give them an acronym.
Yep. Yeah. REM.
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 Oh, my God. The REM Posse.
Yep.
That's
the
pretty
REM
good.
Posse.
Good one.
But isn't that like REM sleep?
Yeah,
that REM. Makes you want to
Well, yeah, but it's a healing sleep. You need it in order to revitalize everything.
Yeah, so when I was in college, I would I had researched, you know, we were always exhausted, and we had I studied architecture, so it was studio based, and you know, you spend a ridiculous amount of hours doing one thing. And so I would get together with my classmates, very good friends of mine, and we would, so I was like, oh, we can sleep within REM. And then we would, you know, we would sleep 4 hours and we would cycle. It was crazy. You know, we were working on our thesis and we would go through these cycles, and it was really just three or four of us that would get together and do this. And you'd sleep less than 2 hours or 4 hours. And if you slept for a four hour block, then we would have been recovered for 8 hours. So we could work for another 8 hours
It's not spelled the same though, because it's Russell Emile Howard. So REHM. So it's Russell Emile Howard Musketeers. So it's REM.
Well, that's okay.
Do you go through, I mean, you're working 12 to 14 hour days.
On production, I mean, look, you have to take a break. There's just no way you can do this. If you don't take a break, you're going to make a mistake. Yeah. And it's only going to be detrimental to the film itself. You have to take a break. And that's one hard lesson, is learning to let go. You can perfect it. I'm a perfectionist, as we keep mentioning over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But at some point, you have to say, you know what? This is as good as I can make it. And I have to let it go and move on.
I need to learn to do that.
We all do.
I'm learning the hard way little by little.
I think a hard lesson for everybody. You just have to learn to let go. I mean, there's just...
When you sacrificed enough time and enough people in your life, you'll learn it.
I mean, look, it's subjective, improving. Yeah. Something is very subjective. I mean, I could look back at my previous films and go, oh, what if I had done that? Right. Or I wish I had done that. Or my gosh, if we could have shot that. Well, you know what? Coulda, woulda, shoulda. Yeah. It's in the past. Move on.
That's a good Celine Dion song. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Really?
Yeah, I love that song.
I'm going to trademark that. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
But I wouldn't do that.
Do you like Celine Dion?
That's the lyrics of the song.
Well, near, far. Everybody knows that song. She's good. No, she's good. There's actually, we talked about Bicentennial Man. Mm-hmm. She did a wonderful song for that film. I forgot what the name of it was, but it was a really heartfelt song.
I'm surprised JB doesn't know it.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, the movie wasn't that successful. Maybe that's why. But it was a really good song. And both Titanic and Bicentennial Man, the composer was James Horner.
James Horner
is really good at this type of music. And his scores, he adapts them very well into songs. He did it with, was it An American Tale?
Okay.
Somewhere Out There.
Yes.
Dreams to Dream on An American Tale 2.
You're right.
I mean, this guy is really good at that. Yeah. So that
song. Didn't he do like Avatar music?
He did Avatar ICU with Leona Lewis. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, look, Celine Dion's a very good singer.
Yeah.
And she has a really good voice. And so, yeah, those two songs. I forgot again what the name of the song
She's
was.
She's going to look it up.
Bicentennial.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up now because I freaking love Celine Dion.
Yeah.
Even though she beats her chest all the time, but. Freaking badass.
I am woman. That's what she's saying.
Then you look at me.
Then you look at me. That's it. It's a really heartfelt song. And, you know,
that's a great
James
song.
James Horner, he knows how to do very sad and lamentable music. I mean, he's just really good at that. You know, whether it's Field of Dreams, Braveheart, I mean, you name it. This guy is just so good at that.
I love Braveheart.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
That scene when William Wallace goes freedom right at the very end and the music is playing and everybody, it's
pounding.
A tearjerker. Yeah, it was really good.
And then he drops the bloody scarf.
No, of course.
Yeah.
What's your all-time favorite film?
My all-time favorite film, probably The Empire Strikes Back.
Really? Yeah. Why is that?
It just worked. It worked on every level. Whether it was the reveal at the end, you know, I am your father, whether it's the acting, the visual effects, the music especially. I mean, that score was it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, that's where John Williams created the Imperial March.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. I mean,
and that line is the line everybody knows. If you think of Star Wars, that is the line everybody says, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, I mean, it was such an incredible reveal. Nobody knew. That was going to be the case. Now, of course, with the prequels, everybody knows that
he's
father, so it kind of spoiled that reveal. Mm-hmm. But back then, in 1980, there was no prequels. And that movie was just so well done. In fact, I think it's better than the first one, A New Hope.
Yeah.
Just a really well done film. One of the few sequels that's actually better than the original. You know, you could say that about The Godfather, I guess.
Yeah.
And then The Empire Strikes Back.
What advice would you lend other independent writers, producers, directors?
Follow your dreams and just work hard.
Simple.
That's pretty much it.
Is there a right or a wrong
no.
way to do things? Okay.
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. You don't even have to go to film school. I just happened to go to film school.
Yeah.
You just have to love film and you have to learn how to do it. Whether, you know, I mean, I worked on, as a production assistant on films. Mm-hmm. Like a film called The Failures with Michael Ironside. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a production assistant. You just have to learn the ropes. That's all. Then you figure out your niche. You know what you like to do. You just have to persevere. Don't get me wrong. It's a very hard industry and you just have to persevere. You just have to really love to make films.
It is a very hard industry. And I mean, being in LA, you know, LA is tough anyways. Mm-hmm. But how do independent artists stand out?
Well, let's say the interviews we're doing now. Mm-hmm. I mean, thank you for having me on board, but it helps to publicize.
Yeah.
You know, you always think about the next project too. So, you know, and I can't go into what we're doing, but, you know, we have several options that Howard and I are dealing with right now. You just get your name out there.
You want to interview about those too?
Yes, we will. Of course. Because I love you guys now.
Oh, thank you. Likewise.
Yeah, thank you.
Ditto.
Ditto, kiddo. What was that from Ghost? Ditto.
Which was a really good film.
Oh, yeah. My God. That's it was another so one. Good. God.
And I love Oda Mae Brown.
Yes.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Was so good.
There's a reason why she won the Oscar for her performance.
Yes. What a wonderful, just a great role to play. And she was absolutely perfect for it. Yes.
What was the damn song he sang that drove her crazy? It was from some play and he just kept singing it when she wouldn't go and talk to Demi Moore for him.
I'm Henry the Eighth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Now I'm gonna have nightmares.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
In the 80s and 90s it was Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. Like, I loved those combinations.
Oh, super good. Seattle.
Yeah.
Seattle. There was another one.
I liked him in Castaway. I loved him in Castaway.
You Got Mail.
And those were my, I loved those movies. And I thought, am I really corny?
Castaway? Wilson.
Yeah.
Oh, Wilson. Yeah.
You're not corny.
One-liners. No. One-liners. They'll stick with you.
Yeah, they do.
No, it's not corny at all. What was it, the one with Meg Ryan? Was it When Harry Met Sally?
When Harry Met
Sally. Oh, that's just classic. Yeah. That scene where she does her, you know, orgasm.
Yes. In the restaurant. Yes.
And then what was that lady next to her go, I think I'll have what she's having.
Yes. That was their money shot.
It just worked.
French Kiss. I mean, Meg Ryan, then she was such a staple.
That's because you thought she was hot.
I loved her. I thought she was adorable. She just didn't fit the mold. You know what I mean? She wasn't the Marilyn Monroe.
It's her smile. I think it's the way she smiled. It's cute.
Yeah. See, I liked her in City of Angels, too. Mm. Another great movie.
Those are wonderful movies. Mm-hmm. Just really good movies. And I feel like, I don't know, in the industry today and what we're seeing, they're totally different types of, everything is just too fast. I mean, really, honestly, one of the movies I recently saw that I really liked was Silver Linings.
Silver Linings Playbook.
It was a good movie.
Yeah. I just want movies to just, I want people to bring it back just a little bit. Can that happen? Is that possible?
It's just the audience expects all that too much information, as we were talking about. They expect all those visual effects shots where, you know, in just this one shot, five different things are happening at the same time. This is just what the current generation, I would say maybe the younger generation, they expect that. So for better or worse, that's what it is. And again, we were saying how Jaws and Star Wars started this trend. Before then, movies were cut differently. It was a lot slower. It was more about, I guess, the interaction with the actors.
Right.
It's different now. You know, for better or worse, this is 2015, not 1975.
Right.
The fact is, these movies make money. So what are the studios going to do? They're going to keep following the same pattern.
Mm, yeah.
Because they are a business. They're about making money, too.
Do you believe, you know, and we're on the same path here in terms of advice, do you believe that it's okay to conform a little? I mean, especially for artists who are up and coming, who want to maybe keep things traditional or move forward because we're in 2013. 2013.
We're in 2013.
How much? She just had a stroke. It's okay.
I keep thinking.
I feel younger.
I keep thinking I'm 30, and I'm not 30. Okay.
She's an old lady.
Am I 30 or 33?
You're not.
But I forgot where I was.
You
want
to ask him if it's okay to conform,
right,
to make a film, even if you believe it should be more traditional?
Because now that we're in 2015, you're talking about.
When you make a film, even on my level, and I'm not making blockbuster films. I would love to, but I'm not. And the reality is you're dealing with many different people. And you have to play the political game. You have to learn the art of compromise.
And you have to sell your movie.
You have to sell the movie. Then yeah. you have to put in certain things. For Transformers, they put in Megan Fox.
Yeah.
Eye candy.
Nothing wrong with that.
The fact is, it helped to sell the film. I mean, Absolutely. It made money. So, you know, and the fact is, all those visual effects, you know, that TMI, we call it too much information.
Right.
Well, guess what? It still
all
made money.
All of it worked for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you got to stay true to yourself and your vision. You have to, because you have to define who you are. People ask why they make so many adaptations of, you know, Superman, or let's say even just you go Shakespeare. They keep remaking Shakespeare.
Right.
It's because it's how Kenneth Branagh makes Shakespeare or Laurence Olivier makes Shakespeare. I mean, it's just, you know, it's their own take on it. Yeah, exactly. To be honest, there's nothing original anymore.
Yes.
I mean, how many stories has been told over the last several thousand years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what is original?
Everything they say in architecture, everything's already been done.
Of course. It's about your take on it. And that's what makes it, I guess, quote unquote, original.
That makes sense.
Unique.
Yeah.
It's Uzi Round time.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. I'm just kidding. Uzi Round is fun.
She was just so enthralled with the conversation. This is the first time ever, actually, she said, oh, man.
Oh, really?
Because usually she's like, Uzi Round, cuts everybody off.
I'm such a bitch.
So, Uzi Round,
yeah.
You basically are going to answer 8 questions and have to try and do it in less than a minute.
Oh.
Each round consists of 8 people. Whoever has the fastest time gets an hour massage from Massage Envy that we give to you.
Oh, okay.
So that's the incentive.
Okay.
So
you have to at least give an answer, even if it's a lie.
Yes.
I'll try.
Okay.
I don't know everything.
Well, but that's why you have to deceive people.
You got to be lightning fast. The time to beat, I think, is like 31 seconds, okay? So just keep that in mind.
All right. And she's
going to
time it.
I'm going to time it on 3.
Okay.
1, 2, 3.
Steven Spielberg has won how many Academy Awards?
2.
Name one actor or actress you would love to get naughty with.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Sweet. Name your favorite chick flick.
White Chicks.
Okay. Oh, that was mine yesterday.
Go, go, go.
Oh, which physical feature do you get complimented on most often?
My nose.
Ooh.
Hurry.
What's your least favorite word?
Rad.
Breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Lunch.
Name something you're proud of.
My looks.
What would you name your autobiography?
Me, me, me.
Done.
38 seconds.
Okay. Not bad. He may be in the next round, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So 38 seconds, not bad.
Yeah.
See, White Chicks. That's my favorite one.
That was funny.
White Chicks is one of her favorite chick flicks.
Yeah, they asked me yesterday what my favorite chick flick is. And I was like, White Chicks, but I called it Black Chicks on accident.
Because
I was thinking of the Wayans brothers because they're black guys. And then I was like, oh, wait, but they pretend to be white chicks.
Look, they don't look like white chicks.
It's
so obvious. But what was funny is that one scene that one of them was like on a date with that guy.
Yeah.
And then obviously he did not want to be on the date with the guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want onions, lots of onions.
Yeah.
And garlic.
And he's partying. Right. And he's, yeah.
And then the guy's like, oh, I find that sexy.
I just like it when the big, like, muscular dude's driving in the car singing Ordinary Day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Terry, I forget his name. He's actually in a show that I absolutely love to watch. It's called Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's really funny. What's his name? Adam.
Okay. Adam Sandberg from SNL.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, one of the main characters, and it's really funny. Anyways, why is your least favorite word rad? Because I use that word a lot.
Because I just made it up.
See?
You told me to answer.
That's
I was
true.
Just answering.
I was like so heartbroken for a second. I was like, what? He cannot lie. And I think it's 3 Academy Awards.
I probably was 3, yes.
I think it's
because
3.
He won one for Best Producer. I know he won 2 for Best Director. Oh, and Schindler's List. He must have won
yeah,
for Best.
Schindler's List. Oh, my
probably
God. Such a good film.
But again, you put me on the spot, so I was like, blah, blah, blah.
At least you
and,
answered
And that. It wasn't my looks, by the way, but that was being sarcastic.
I like it.
For anyone out there, it wasn't my looks.
That's awesome.
Or my nose.
That was going to say, or your nose. Where and how can people find you?
You can go to russem.com, russem.com. The current movie Occupants is occupantsthemovie.com. So you can find me there.
With 2 C's for those who can't spell occupants.
Correct.
Oh my God, rad.
Very rad. Radical. Gnarly.
Bitchin'.
Cowabunga.
Right on. Russ, thank you for inviting us into your space and taking the time to share your knowledge with our audience, with us and our audience.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
It was a great interview.
Yes, we appreciate it. Our listeners appreciate it. Definitely one of my favorite interviews.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah. You two are very fun.
Thank you, Charlie V and JB.
Oh, yeah.
And our good looks and charm.
Of course.
He's like, he throws those out the window.
Your good looks and charm.
We're embodying all of it now.
This is Russ Emanuel, and you've been listening to the Social Informant Podcast. And thank you so much, everybody. Have a good night.